First, the Nobel Prize for Physics this year was recently awarded to researchers who successfully detected gravitational waves back in 2015. It was the first time that researchers had been able to measure the ripples in space-time that were theorized by Albert Einstein a century ago. And playing a key role in that research was a team of scientists from UW-Milwaukee.
UWM was also involved in a discovery announced just this morning. Gravitational waves measured earlier this year came from the collision of two neutron stars. That was the first time that the detection of waves has been matched with a burst of visible light from deep space.
Patrick Brady is a professor and director of the Center for Gravitation, Cosmology, and Astrophysics at UW-Milwaukee. Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to get into this new discovery in a bit, but first let's get to the basics. What are gravitational waves?
Well, Einstein invented a theory of gravity nearly 100 years ago, and he explains gravity as the curvature of space-time. So his equations, they relate this curvature to the matter that's in the universe. And he tells us in his equations that matter tells space-time how to curve, and curvature tells matter how to move. So if you take as a consequence of that, what happens when you take, say, your fist and you close it and you shake it really fast, when you do that, you're shaking matter around, and what you cause is these ripples of curvature to move outwards from your shaking fist. Now, those ripples in curvature, they're kind of like the ripples on the surface of a pond where a rock is thrown in. So you throw the rock in and the ripples on the surface propagate outwards from the point of entry of the rock. Well, the waves propagate away from your fist as you shake them. Now, the real question then becomes, how do you know that a gravitational wave has gone by? And the answer to that question comes from the fact that as a gravitational wave passes, it squeezes space-time in one direction and stretches it in the perpendicular direction. And then as the wave goes by, that stretching and squeezing alternates so that you end up squeezed and stretched, and then it goes back to stretched and squeezed, and that keeps alternating back and forth as the wave passes.
Now, Albert Einstein had the math to figure out gravitational waves, but not the technology to measure them. Can you talk about what we have now that was able to successfully measure gravitational waves just a couple of years ago?
Yeah, so the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, a rather big mouthful that we shorten to LIGO, is a pair of gravitational wave detectors, one in Hanford in Washington and one in Livingston in Louisiana. And what they do is they are instruments where they have two perpendicular arms. At the ends of the two arms, which are 4 kilometers each long, so about 3 miles each long, they hang mirrors. And then what you do is you shine a laser beam down the two arms to measure the length of each of them. It reflects off the mirror at the end and comes back. And if there are any deviations or any changes in the relative lengths of each of the arms, that shows up as a signal when you recombine the laser light. So we basically use lasers to measure the stretching and squeezing of space-time as the gravitational wave passes.
So that's pretty cool. Now, how do you and your team at UW-Milwaukee help with this research?
Well, we've been involved in the search for gravitational waves for about 22 years, and we started out in different ways. One member of the group, Alan Wiseman, first calculated the expected waves from things like pairs of neutron stars. He was one of the early people to do those calculations and try to figure out what the waves would be like when we measure them here on the Earth. Over time, we've become more and more involved in the analysis of the data taken by the LIGO detectors, but also taken by a partner detector called Virgo in Europe. So we build the computing systems and we design the data analysis procedures so that we can search through this data for very minute signals of gravitational waves that are hidden and buried under the noise. And we pull them out so that we can know that a gravitational wave has gone by. So that's our primary role. And then we are heavily involved in the interpretation of the results, which we can speak a little bit about later when we talk about the neutron stars.
We're talking to Patrick Brady from the UW-Milwaukee. He's director of the Center for Gravitation, Cosmology, and Astrophysics. We're talking about his work and his colleagues' work on detecting gravitational waves. And Patrick, let's get into that neutron star. The news out this morning officially of a pretty amazing thing that happened earlier this year involving two neutron stars, apparently. Talk us through what happened.
Well, so on August 17th at around 8 a.m. Central Time, the gravitational waves from the merger of a pair of neutron stars passed by the Earth, and they were measured by the two LIGO detectors, and as it turns out, not measured by the partner one in Italy. 2 seconds later, there was a burst of gamma rays that was observed by the Fermi gamma ray burst satellite, and the dramatic association for us between these two things happening within just a couple of seconds of each other suggested right away that the gamma ray burst was associated with the merger of this pair of neutron stars. Now, we'd never seen the gravitational waves or never measured gravitational waves from neutron stars before, but we had measured gamma ray bursts, and it had long been theorized that gamma ray bursts, short gamma ray bursts, were caused by the merger of pairs of neutron stars. But with this detection of the gravitational waves, we confirmed that. So we now know that the short gamma ray bursts are actually caused by the merger of neutron stars.
And then this led to, I think, pointing telescopes out there trying to look for something new up in the sky that might be this the visible results of a collision between two neutron stars?
Exactly, because when these two neutron stars collide with each other, they're about, each one is a little more than the same mass as the sun, and they're going near the speed of light. So when they crash into each other, they generate this huge explosion, and they cause all sorts of material to fly off away from where they collide. In that process, they generate a lot of energy. They, in fact, it turns out, it was theorized that they would generate some of the heavier elements that exist in the universe through a mechanism known as the R process. So things like gold, platinum, uranium would be generated in this explosion that follows the collision of the neutron stars. At the same time, the material heats up and it gives off light. And so what we were doing with our partner astronomers was we sent them what we guessed to be the likely location of the neutron star merger on the sky. It was somewhere in the constellation Hydra. And they took their telescopes and started to search over the sky looking for something that was getting brighter, something that hadn't been there before on the night sky. And sure enough, the 1 meter Carnegie Swope telescope found a little tiny bright dot near a galaxy with kind of the telephone number NGC 4993. And that little dot turned out to be, after confirmation, associated with the merger of the neutron stars. So now we know both about the merger through the gravitational waves. We saw the gamma rays that were emitted right away afterwards, and about 11 hours after the merger, we saw this bright optical point on the sky, which told us exactly which galaxy the merger had happened in.
Now, you mentioned the date, August 17th, I think it was.
Yep, that's
now,
right.
Most of us here on the ground weren't aware that anything was going on, but as I'm reading about this, it seems like in astronomy, this is a breaking point. This is a dividing point. Things have changed now in our understanding of the universe.
Absolutely. This was pretty much one of the most exciting breakthroughs in astronomy in a long time. I was walking around the streets of Amsterdam with my wife at the time when I got the notification on my cell phone, and I was just, oh my gosh, what's this? And she was, what's wrong? And I had to explain, it was just one of the biggest discoveries in astronomy for quite some time. So it's been, it really is a breakthrough. Being able to see both the gravitational waves and the electromagnetic or the light from these objects means that we learn all sorts of new things that we couldn't do before. One of my favorites is that because the because we saw the flash of gamma rays and we saw the gravitational waves just 2 seconds apart, we know that gravitational waves travel very, 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 very close to the speed of light, within 1 part in 10 to the power of 15. Now, 10 to the power of 15 is about 0.1 trillion, okay? So this is 1 part in 0.1 trillion parts that that these actually travel at the same speed. It's, we knew that right away. On August 16th, we didn't know it. On August 17th, we did.
Patrick, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks very much, Rob. Have a good day.
We've been talking to Patrick Brady, director of the Center for Gravitation, Cosmology, and Astrophysics at UW-Milwaukee. He was with us to talk about the role UWM scientists have played in recent discoveries of gravitational waves coming from cataclysmic events in space.